Okay, is everybody back? Looks like
yeah.
It. Yep.
Yep. Okay, so before we get started, I want to know if there are any announcements. I do have one. Those of you who are on the tri-agency list will have already seen this, but Jill Carson sent out an email reminding us that the session proposals for AGU's meeting next fall, the deadline is April 19th. And so I am going to coordinate those sessions again this year, and hopefully we'll get input from the tri-agency group also. I sent them a follow-up email suggesting they have the coordinate their sessions through me so that we can sort of have a coherent set of sessions. What I'm going to suggest is that people start – I'm going to forward the email that Jill sent a lot because she makes some suggestions about appropriate kinds of sessions that she thought might be useful to have. So everybody can start thinking about it, and certainly contact me if you have particular sessions so we can get that going. But then I was going to suggest that we could potentially have our call on March 12th, which is an open time, to sort of discuss the breadth of ideas so we can make sure that people have sessions that are distinct, that we cover the areas that people are interested in having. And that can be quite broad. So I just wanted to put that out there, and I will forward the email to remind everybody. Are there any questions about that?
Well, first, Tamara, thank you for being willing to do that again. It's always an important thing that you've done for us for years, and it's very much appreciated. The second piece
yeah.
of that is usually there's a structure to the, you know, you've provided some structure in the past. Did we use the same structure last year as we did the year before of the big, you know, the themes of the
themes? No, what we did is, since we don't want to be tied into the same sessions, I provided those as ideas, and that's why I'm going to forward Jill's email, because she identifies particular kinds of themes that might be useful. So
great.
We can review what we've had before, but those can certainly change based on people's ideas. We don't have to start from scratch. And
exactly.
So, but the other thing that I want to, the other point I want to make, which I also made in for the tri-agency listserv, there's two compelling reasons to do this. First of all, by having the conversation early on, if two groups are interested in, I'm just picking a topic out of the hat, are interested in doing evaluation and they don't know about each other, two sessions might get proposed about evaluation. But if they do know about each other, then we can have one session, and then when people come to submit abstracts, they'll see where they fit, and they won't say, well, should I submit it to this evaluation session or that evaluation session? The other compelling reason with respect to that is by having those conversations up front, when we have sessions that are mostly different but, you know, have some commonalities, when particular sessions don't get the requisite number of abstracts, AGU in the past just tells you who you're combined with. And last year, they asked me who should
right.
be combined. I mean, I really offered that to them, and they were really astonished that I was able to get everybody's agreement within in one day. And people were happy because they kind of knew what these other sessions were.
Right.
And then the last thing is that I got everybody's input on when the conveners and their invited speakers had conflicts. And AGU let me suggest the schedule for the sessions, taking that feedback into account. So while we couldn't avoid all conflicts, we did have to have days where there were two sessions that were concurrent, but they were in adjacent rooms. And a lot of people can't afford to stay at the AGU meeting all week, so having our sessions spread out over the whole week is not really feasible for a lot of people. So, but the point is that we could maximize a lot of things by having AGU look to us to suggest the schedule. So there's a lot of good reasons for coordinating these sessions.
Absolutely.
Okay. Any other announcements?
This is Kristen. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I was on mute for a minute there. I'm actually home with my son today. I also, relatedly, just wanted to make folks knew that the North American Association for Environmental Ed Conference proposals for presentations is open. And I'm leading the teaching about environmental issues strand, which is where we would all fit in quite well. It, for the first time in a long time, there's an actual strand that makes a lot of sense. The description is innovative ways to teach about current environmental challenges such as climate change, water quality, et cetera, et cetera. Educating
good.
For informed participation in key environmental issues.
So
and
you're the
that is due
coordinator
March 31st. What's that? I'm sorry.
Are you the coordinator of this strand? Is that what you said?
I'm the strand leader, which means I'll be in charge of getting them reviewed and also drumming up people to help me review.
Okay, great. Well, that's and so you said the abstracts or the proposals were due March 31st?
Yep, and I'll be sending something out about that to the list.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
Because like we've done in the past, we sort of like to know that this is a little bit different than the AGU and GSA sessions, but we
right.
would like to know what people are submitting so we can sort of make that one-pager list of Climate Literacy Network presentations.
And the conference will be in Baltimore this year, next October.
Great.
It'll be close to probably a lot more people.
Okay, so
there's also a strand in citizen science, which I can see a lot of good phonology stuff fitting in there, obviously. And then, of course, you can fit it in other places. But it's nice.
Okay.
I was happy to lead that strand. I think it was created due to some of my vocalization of there being needing to be something more focused around climate change. So.
Right. And just so everybody knows, to complete the suite of meetings that we do this for, GSA did already, their session proposal deadline's passed, but we have a couple of sessions proposals into that, and so we'll let everybody know the status of those once we know. Okay, any other announcements?
This is Mark. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're a little quiet, but yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, I've got a headset on, the Chapman Conference on Climate Change Communications is coming up. It's an AGU conference in Winter Park, Colorado, this June. And I've been pushing for them to have a very integrated education session so that it's not just about communication in terms of media, but it's also including education, outreach, and how they can be better integrated with communication. So if anybody's interested in attending that, they should have the sessions finalized soon, and I think the deadline for abstracts is passed, but we're also looking at the possibility of having some of the sessions done remotely for those who can't get to Colorado mm-hmm. this summer.
Do you have the exact date? June what?
Hold on just a second.
And where did you say it was in Colorado?
It's at Snow Mountain Ranch, which is near Winter Park, Colorado.
Oh.
Mark, I have the dates here, the 8th to the 13th in June.
There you go.
Yeah, I just looked
okay.
at the EDU website.
Great.
Why would they choose that location?
Colorado in the summer?
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's pretty remote. It seems like an odd spot to choose for
a
meeting like that.
It's 2 hours from Denver. You can get there on Amtrak. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, there's obviously a ton of people in the Boulder, Denver area involved with climate that won't have to go too far.
So maybe another announcement, if I can add one.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
So one thing, I don't know how many people are with us today, but Anna Gold sent out an email, and maybe it's already been discussed, and so I can stop. But the gap analysis thin spot work that Clean has just completed, has anybody heard about that yet? Are you guys all tracking it?
People know about it, but I don't know that they know that it's recently been updated.
So I'll be brief here then. So in the community part of the Clean Collection website, there is for resource developers, if I remember right, and that's where
yes.
you find the gaps and thin spots analysis. It's been updated for the full collection of the 511 or so resources, but a new approach was added by doing that for the energy literacy work as well as the climate literacy. It's been updated, and they're also working on topical, because there's a topical part of the collection that's still being worked on, but there's a series of gaps of thin spot analysis that's been worked on. So I hope you guys get a chance to check that out and see. I think there's a lot of very valuable work that's been done there, and so I think you guys, it's an announcement because it's
okay,
new.
Great. Yes, great. It is new.
And Frank, thanks for saying this. This is Anna Gold. Just go to that website. There, we are still lacking thumbnails. There's some glitches on the technical side, and but the documents that you see there are all up to date, so you can click there and see them. But they don't look fancy at the moment. We hope we can resolve it this week.
Fantastic. And Anna, thank you for your team's work. It's been spectacular stuff. Really, really useful stuff for the community.
Sure. Thanks.
Okay. Any other announcements? Okay, well, then we'll get to the topic of discussion, which sort of got formulated just in the past few days. As those of you who were part of the Climate Literacy Network from its very, very beginning, you know that we actually weren't always called the Climate Literacy Network. We had another name before that, and it was changed to the Climate Literacy Network, and we've had that name for quite a while now. But there's been some confusion. So the Clean Project and the Clean Collection grew out of conversations of the Climate Literacy Network. So Mark and Frank were all part of these conversations way back a number of years ago. And we made the decision in that proposal to call it the Climate Literacy and Energy Awareness Network. Energy awareness being we didn't really have energy literacy principles to point to, and actually the team defined some placeholders, which now Frank has just indicated we've now updated the collection to reference actually the new vetted climate energy literacy principles. Anyway, there has been over the years confusion about the relationship between the Climate Literacy Network and the clean effort. In fact, many times people talk about the clean community and the clean teleconference, and they're really talking about the Climate Literacy Network teleconference. And we address that to some degree by integrating the Climate Literacy Network webpage into the clean portal. But we need to sort of continue to evolve that. In addition, we've had with the energy literacy principles being established, and the clean collection being realigned with those principles, Danelle Hogan, who is the Einstein Fellow at the Department of Energy, had made the suggestion about a week or so ago that we consider changing the name of the Climate Literacy Network to the Climate and Energy Literacy Network. Part of her reasoning was that she has actually provided some supplementary funds to the Clean Project to not only have more energy resources in the collection, but to facilitate that energy curriculum developer stakeholders around education materials to facilitate that community. We were planning on integrating them into the activities and making presentations on the Climate Literacy Network teleconference that we hold regularly, but she thought that instead of trying to form a whole separate community, it made sense to draw them into this community, and so that's why she made that suggestion. And so my sense was that it's no longer energy awareness, it is energy literacy, and so what I'm proposing here and will now be open for discussion is changing the name of the Climate Literacy Network to the Climate and Energy Literacy Network, but instead of trying to make the letters match into some acronym, that we simply call it CLEAN. CLEAN is recognizable, it's pronounceable, and at least in this community, people know it for what it is in terms of promoting climate and energy literacy. And so so I'm making that suggestion now because it's not quite, at least from my perspective, it's not quite as important anymore to make sure that the letters in the acronym match what the name of the network is. So anyway, so that's the proposal. What I thought we'd do is talk about it here on this teleconference with those of you who've been involved for a while, and then based on our conversations to send it out to the larger group. If we do make this change, we probably won't change the email address of the Climate Literacy Network, but we can change how that the bracketed CLN that now comes up with any message. We could sort of transition to saying CLN/clean and then eventually just having it be clean so that emails that come, people will sort of start identifying our group as the clean community that is a part of and you know, the people side of the clean collection as a separate but all-encompassing group. And so that's kind of the proposal, and I think I sent an email that Frank and Mark looked at early on as to what their thoughts were on this. I don't know if they want to add anything, or I can just open it for discussion to anybody.
So Tamara, we have been thinking about this a little while, and you know, I think it's kind of like the evolution of Turk. That your name used to mean something, and now
right.
It's just been superseded with Turk.
Right.
It does. You don't actually break it down into something below. It's not an acronym anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think clean, while the letters don't really line up very well, it does have a brand, and it is close to what we're talking about. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I've thought about this a great deal, and I like the idea. And I
yeah.
think it's good that, you know, how, I mean, one of the things we're going to have to watch for is, does the work of these two communities kind of distract us from our core pieces? Or are we actually getting a collective impact together? Because the topics are interwoven beautifully
mm-hmm.
in policy and action and education. But, you know, are these communities really working on different things? And is it going to get harder for us to work? If I'm merging them, that's just something to watch. It can make it easier and better. So I like the idea.
You know, I actually don't think it impacts, at least in our current activities, it doesn't seem to me it impacts us at all. People are, it in terms of our ability to do the work that we're doing, because those of us that are on the teleconference will continue to call in and see the value of it for them. And the outside world will hopefully begin to understand the connection more if we make that clearer with the names. Now, that actually brings me to another point that I wanted to make, and I talked to Anna about this yesterday. One of the things that we would like to get at is to get a better understanding of the value of, I'm going to just use the words Climate Literacy Network now, or I could say Clean Community, you know, so we can use those interchangeably to talk about our group. But the value of that group to them, one of the things that has struck me over the past, I guess, couple of years or so, is that people will come up to me at a meeting and see my name on my name badge, and talk to me about how they're really engaged with the Climate Literacy Network, that they read all the emails. Some do, but it's somebody that I have no idea who they are. I don't recognize their name, and I've not had any exchange with them. And it turns out that they either lurk on the call, so you lurkers out there, I hope you're benefiting from the call, or they say they read all of the emails and find them very valuable. And so the reach is beyond those that we talk to every day. And so one of the things I was thinking we might do is put together a Survey Monkey survey to send out to the Climate Literacy Network to get a better understanding of the value of the Climate Literacy Network to this broader community. There are 385 people on the listserv. And we get many more requests to be added to the listserv than we get to be taken off the listserv. So it is a growing group, and people do find it valuable. So Anna and I were talking about doing this potentially really soon. So there's actually two discussions here. One is, if anybody has further comments or questions or concerns about potentially changing the name of the Climate Literacy Network to the Climate and Energy Literacy Network and calling it CLEAN, and then the kinds of things that we might ask about in a survey to get at this the value of this community. And I will tell you up front, there's going to be a special issue of the Journal of Geoscience Education about the impact of climate change education on communities. And I would like to be able to hold this community as an example. And that's why what prompted me to think about getting this survey to get this broader input than just from the people that I talk to week to week.
Tamara, which journal is doing that, Tamara?
What?
Which journal is doing that?
The Journal of Geoscience Education.
Oh, and okay.
JGE.
Yep.
Tamara, I was just going to say, this is Scott. I totally, full-heartedly support this idea, and it really goes back, and I certainly associate Mark with this idea of focusing also on solutions as we were doing climate education. It wasn't just simply understanding the science. We really wanted to bring in solutions, and that was a theme that early on we really started to focus on. And this just strikes me as coming full circle, and we start realizing the relationship between understanding and solutions that are energy-focused. So I think it's just absolutely appropriate, and I think it'll work just great.
Okay. Anything else? Mark?
I'm all in favor. I think you did a great job of making the rationale and covering the history. So.
Yes, and also I should say that Mark is the one who came up with an acronym that is CLEAN.
Yes.
I will give him credit where credit is due. Mark is the one that came up with that, which I thought was perfect right away.
It was.
I will tell you, though, an interesting thing. If you do a search and just put CLEAN in a Google search, you come up with lots of cleaning solutions.
Good.
And formulas. But if you do CLEAN climate, the CLEAN collection is at the top of the list. So. Okay, so is there anybody who has any concerns about this? Okay, so what I'll do is I'll send an email out separate from the AGU information email to the Climate Literacy Network to sort of broadly get any input on that. But what I'd like to move on now, with the help of Anna, is if we could just have a discussion now of the various ways that you think the climate literacy or clean community is useful to you in that we might begin to formulate some questions that we might ask on a survey to get broader input on those things. Obviously, this group here, and I can tell you there's 8 people on the phone, we all have our own values, and we are people that call in a lot of the time. And so we're not going to get it at everything, but if we can sort of begin to formulate those questions, that would be helpful because we'd like to kind of do this relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm. Tamara, are you going to put the proposal about changing the name in the survey itself, or shall we just consider that it's kind of a done deal?
I'm going to send it a separate email separate from the survey because the survey is going to take a little bit more time. What I'd like to do with that is I'll send out a separate email asking the question and seeing if we get any negative feedback at all, and I'm not going to give it a whole lot of time. Not like the survey will give a little bit more time,
right?
And then we'll make a transition where I'll first be putting CLN/CLEAN for maybe a week or two,
right.
To sort of ease that transition in terms of recognition, and then just make the transition. And then there's lots of things in the CLEAN portal that we can. We can make that announcement in the on the Climate Literacy Network page in the portal. I mean, not that A lot of people go to the teleconference page, but not a whole lot of people. It's not even formatted real well, the Climate Literacy Network page. And
right.
We're working through a slow process of addressing that, but we're not there yet. But this would help. Making this change would help that a lot.
Yes, I agree.
So one, go ahead, Chris.
I had a few questions. So are we talking about the survey now? Is that what we've transitioned to here?
Yes.
Yes.
And Frank, was that what you were going to talk about? I don't want to butt in before you're...
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
So I just had personally a few questions that I would be interested in, and
okay.
I think would be useful, but it seems like there's probably others that aren't on here that could supply some.
We'll share the list of questions. Well, actually,
great.
That's kind of strange. We can't share. We're going to share the list of questions with a small group.
So some of them are probably self-evident, but it would obviously be really, I think, important to know how you would describe yourself professionally. Who's using this? Are you more an educator? Are you more a scientist? Are you someone that's in an NGO, or are you federal, et cetera, et cetera? And then I've used the Climate Literacy Network for, and then some sort of choices, you can select as many as you want, for networking, for teaching ideas, for support group, for, those sorts of things. And then I think it would be really interesting to know, because of this Climate Literacy Network, I have been able to present at a conference, attend a conference, networked with these individuals and created this. So some short answer sort of spaces too, which Google Forms can be good for this too, if SurveyMonkey isn't working well. And then I think it would be interesting to know also if you were going to rank, and I'm not sure how you would quantify it, but of how important is the Climate Literacy Network to your daily work, which would be, if you're looking for funding for it too, for me personally, because that's all we do is climate change ed, it's, very important. But other folks might say, oh, it's, this percentage, or I'm not sure how you'd rank that. So those are some of the ones that I thought of.
Mm-hmm. Great suggestions.
Yep.
Wrote them all down.
Hey.
The last one, Kristen, I think...
Go ahead, Emma.
The last one, how important CLN is for your daily work. I think it would probably be good to work a little bit on this question, because doing climate education is one thing, but I don't know, you could probably do your work without the CLN. So I think I think it's an interesting idea, and we have to just make sure
the question has to be asked in a way that means the same thing to you as it does to me, so the results are meaningfully. And it may be that it's multiple questions.
Without the Climate Literacy Network, I would be unable to, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I'll have to think about it. But there seems to be there's a question that could be like that would be an important one if you were looking also for funding for a network like this.
Actually, Anna, what may be useful is to ask Susan Linz if she's run into just a sort of a generic how to rank, how to write a question that involves ranking, and then we could probably start to make to then adapt it to our specific situation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So the another reservoir of questions possibly could be in the clean informant pool. What's the name of the group that does our evaluation?
Inverness.
I'm wondering if there are any of their questions that would be useful here. They've been asking them about the clean collection. I'm wondering if there's those kinds of things. That you just customize the question. They've already put the time and energy into the structure of the questions. And it might be interesting to see what we're asking like an informant pool of our community, really what is the, and just take those questions and customize them toward these ends, I think would be a valuable way.
Let me just define, so because some of us know what we mean by the clean informant pool and some don't. When the CLEAN project started, the external evaluators put out an application, and we were looking for people, since our audience was middle school, high school, and undergraduate, we looked for people who would respond to surveys about the CLEAN portal over the life of the project. So they kind of committed to answering the surveys over and over. Again, I think there's going to be a total of three. And this was the people that were selected. I think we got 500 and some applications, and we chose 220 people, and they were predominantly middle school, high school, and undergraduate faculty educators. And so that's what the informant pool is, just so everybody else knows what we're talking about.
Yep.
Frank, I think that's a very interesting idea, especially because then we can compare the population of the people on the CLN call to this informant network, which are more teachers, and they are actually in the classroom. In the informant pool, they ask a lot of also attitude questions and how much are you involved in activities related to climate change and personal knowledge questions.
Yep.
So if we wanted, we could also ask some of those just to understand the population better.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And some of these knowledge questions were taken from the Lazarevitz work to be able to compare to the general U.S. population.
The only thing we need to be careful of with respect to this, and I'm in favor of doing this, but we can't make it too long because some people just – the people that are less engaged will be less inclined to answer if it's too long.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. But, at least you know, we don't have to, you know, at least the evaluators have come, thought some of this structurally through, so we don't have to, and there's intercomparability, which might be valuable. But, you know, the mm-hmm. other piece from their work is the usability. And I would imagine, Tamara, and we're doing this, there are things that we've tried to do over the years in the network. We've tried to make the website do one thing. We've tried to do listservs one way. I think, you know, one other piece of this is all the ways we've worked together as a network. Because we've had, you know, face-to-face gatherings at conferences where we just happen to have social hours, but those turn into pretty fruitful conversations. We've had side meetings. We've had, you know, and one other thing that I think is really valuable to look at is when a new proposal, like the environmental literacy grants are out right now for NOAA, is, you know, a group of people will kind of spin out of the network calls, knowing each other from networking, and collaborate on the proposal and sometimes get funded. So I think, you know, how useful, you know, to your work has this networking potential been for, you know, grant writing would be one mm-hmm. very specific thing, but I think it's, I mean, CLEAN was part of that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Any other ideas for things to explore? You don't have to formulate a question, just sort of an area that you think, well, Climate Literacy Network is really useful for me, and this is so that we just sort of know that there's a range of questions out there that we might think about asking.
Right. Tamara, I wonder whether we want to sort of have something a little bit open that sort of, are there other ways in which we can support you as, you know, as a network, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, we can certainly have an area for open comments.
Yeah, because there may be other things that the network can evolve that we haven't been able to do till now.
And we can actually have multiple. I mean, if we have this sort of sectioned into different kinds of sets of questions, we might leave open comments for each individual section.
Yes, that'd be easy.
Again, not wanting to make this too long either, but.
Right.
Yeah, this is Mark. And one question that I have is, and maybe we don't want to go into this line of thought, but you know, we're involved with this Understanding Global Change project, which obviously relates to climate change, but it's not kind of exclusively focused on heat-trapping gases and the climate system. You know, we're also looking at other human impacts on the Earth system, especially the biologic realm.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe there's a question that we could ask about global change, you know, whether people think about that much above and beyond climate change, and, you know, are they involved with, you know, related literacy efforts? If so, you know, could CLEAN help in providing them with information and sort of serving as a forum for global change writ large, not just the climate specific issues that we mainly deal with.
Right.
Well, you know, Mark, I personally, I mean, when I talk about climate change, I'm not talking just about greenhouse gases either.
Yeah.
I'm really, my perspective, and maybe this is just me, that global change and climate change are, I'm referring to the same thing. I don't see climate change as a special area. But again, that could just be me.
Well, I think we need to clarify that because I think many of us do, you know, look at other aspects of human impacts beyond just, you know, heat-trapping gases. But on the other hand, some people, that's really their only focus. And, you know, there's all these other issues of human impacts that are covered in NGSS that are really not so much climate-related, but they're more about water pollution and things like that that sort of,
you know, Mark,
fit more under the umbrella of global change rather than just climate change.
So Mark, you know, an interesting possible way of getting at some of what you're getting at, sorry for my grammar, is, you know, the 300-plus people that are in the network, what community did you come from before you came to climate literacy? Because I think it's kind of telling. So for me, I came from remote sensing education and earth system science. That was the community I came from before coming here. Others came from different communities. Scott, I mean, you did a lot of work in ocean literacy.
Yep.
And other things. So some of the, you know, that kind of gives us a sense of the range of prior communities, and your perspectives might come from some of that. I don't know. I don't know if that's a valuable area to look at, but I've always found it very interesting.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm also wondering if, once again, this not getting too long, but thinking about Mark, and I guess, Frank, you were in on that too when you were talking about mapping out who's doing what, where, if this is an opportunity with two or three questions to at least get a sense of different sorts of thing, you know, the people that are a member of this network, you'd think this could be fairly encompassing.
Right.
Well, could you, when you say two to three questions, asking what?
I don't know, that's what I'm saying, how to make it succinct, but, you know, I guess knowing how are you involved in climate and energy literacy, describe your involvement.
Right.
And
right. Well, that kind of gets at the question that you had suggested earlier, which is what do you see yourself as?
Well, it's a little bit different, though. I mean, you could see yourself as this, you know, or what are you? I'm an educator, but then your involvement specifically with climate and energy literacy may be a little bit different, you know?
Yeah. So, Christian, what do you think about if we, you know, one way of kind of getting a window into that is what professional societies do you belong to?
Yeah.
And just look at, because, I mean, you know, NSTA is huge for me, but as is AGU, but GSA is not.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas others, GSA and AMS is going to be their core professional societies, and then others are going to be NAAEE and NESTA, and, you know, we could get it's not an infinite list, but it would give us a kind of a field perspective.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, we could ask a question, or I mean, because there's various terms, not just global change, but environmental change, climate change. All of those, for me, refer to similar things. Now, certainly, there's various aspects of those, like Mark mentioned, you know, water pollution and just in changes in the environment that are, you know, that don't have to do directly with greenhouse gases. But I've never thought of climate change as just greenhouse gas related. There's just too many interconnections, and so I you know, but it would be interesting to get others' perspective on that. I think that would be really useful, and how they see themselves fitting into that spectrum. So asking maybe about what aspect of climate slash global slash environmental change you're most involved with may be very useful.
Yeah, I mean, we're in the process of doing a needs assessment survey for the Understanding Global Change project, and we're in the process, you know, we're coming up with some of those questions to try to tease out even whether people have ever heard the term global change and what they make of it, because it can be very confusing to folks.
And what group, where are you sending this?
Well, it's mainly for teachers, middle and high school teachers. You know, some of them will certainly be familiar with it. And in fact, there's a new biology textbook called Global Change Biology. So in the biology realm, that the concept of global change seems to be, you know, increasingly accepted and understood. But, you know, in other areas, not so much.
You know, there's another cross-sect of our community that might be interesting to look at, and that's, you know, I've been thinking about that teacher in Germany, Tamara.
Yeah.
And what she did with our community was very interesting, because she is a practitioner. She is actually in classrooms today or tomorrow, versus people who are more programmatic. People who are, you know, they're different kinds of roles, but it's, you know, it's like kind of like ecosystem health. What's our community, our network diversity? And is there, maybe that's similar to what we were looking at before, but I think the practitioner, non-practitioner space is quite interesting in our community.
Right. That was one of our, in looking at the listserv, that was one of our more active exchanges. That exchange occurred over a two-week period. It was really astonishing. I was really very impressed with the feedback that she was able to get quickly.
But you know, I'm wondering if we couldn't have one of those bifurcated questions where if you said, I'm a teacher, why is this valuable to you? And we could ask a slightly different question if you're a scientist. Some of the people who responded to her were scientists who are working in this field, or professors who are scientists who are also professors. I mean, it's they got a lot of so it might be interesting to see how that works.
Yeah, the thing is that we don't have just educators and scientists on the Climate Literacy Network, and so we'd have to sort of think about how we ask that so that we actually get the diverse perspectives and understand them, as opposed to just that bifurcation.
Oh, I didn't mean bifurcation in the sense that there are only two. I was just using it as an example of, like, you could go here or here, and there could be eight different pathways there. I don't know what the natural set is.
I think it's great to ask a question like this. We have to be a little bit careful. For example, me, I'm a scientist, but I'm more of an educator, and so it's just difficult where someone would see themselves, especially in the field that we're working in. I think there's people that come from very different backgrounds doing the same work right now.
Yep.
I think it's great to explore this. And however we do this, we'll just have to be careful of making it logical.
Right. Well, I think sometimes, especially university faculty, they see themselves as scientists and educators, and then it's hard to differentiate. But, Frank, I think what you might be getting at is K-12 teachers as opposed to undergraduate faculty. So, I don't know, but Anna's right. We just have to be careful about how, make sure we at least understand how we're writing the question. Okay, are there any other areas? I mean, so let's sort of think a little bit about those people that are just reading listserv. Is there particular questions that we might ask people that don't really talk on the phone with us and might not know any of the individuals, but really only engage with the listserv?
I think it would be interesting how many people actually read, like ask how many of the, what percentage of the conversations do you actually read, and just see how many people just skim it or not read it or read everything. And then ask how often they call in, so then we get somehow at how many people are actively listening in, how many are actually following, and asking who posted before.
Mm-hmm. How many calls, like quantify, how many, approximately how many calls a month do you attend, or a year?
Yeah, that's hard. I mean, I have the numbers for how many people call in each week. And so it would probably be more worthwhile to say, do you participate in the call 25% of the time, 50% of the time, 75% of the time? I mean, that, I don't think anybody's going to know unless they call in all the time or they don't ever call in.
Yeah.
People aren't going to know too much more gradation than that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sorry, I hung up on myself.
You hung up on yourself. Okay.
Yeah. And iPhones are very sensitive.
Yes, they are. let's see, with respect to the listserv. Presenting also. One of the things we do is we post the auto recordings. And I've listened to a few, you know, especially those I've missed. My guess is that the numbers are low, but it's probably worth asking.
Yeah.
As to how many people listen to one that's been recorded.
Can we get
that
web stats also? Can you use web statistics to say somebody opening or downloading an audio file?
Can you look at the websites for, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I've not tried to look at it at that fine grain, the Google Analytics. I don't know that you can do that. I mean, maybe you can do that. I'm not really sure.
I think it's still worth asking, but it would be interesting to have both information for the paper.
Yeah. I know that I like having the recording so that we sort of have an archive that we can point people to, even if people don't look at a whole lot of them. I mean, right now they're just sort of in a chronological list, which is not easily searchable. But it could be that down the line, if it proves to be valuable, we could potentially, you know, tag the title somehow. I mean, I don't know. This is not anything I have funding to do now, but to somehow make that archive more usable. Right now it's very usable if you've missed it and within the next couple of weeks you want to listen to it again, it's easy to find. Or if it's longer term and you kind of remember when it was, you can search it. But other than that, if I sort of think Laura Tannenbaum gave her talk she talked last week, but when did she talk before? And it took me some time. But I only had 3 years of teleconferences to go through the list. But so that was not easy to find. But it may be useful if people think that, you know, so it might be useful to ask that kind of question.
Tamara, one of the things we could do, and just a suggestion, is we could actually put these recordings as part of the clean collection, a separate tag, and use all of that machinery that we...
I can't call it part of the clean collection because it's not reviewed.
Yeah.
But we can certainly have it someplace, you know, certainly right now, it can be found within the clean portal. It just can't be part of the clean collection.
Yeah, I guess you're right, yeah.
But it
should be quite separate. That's true.
But I think the metadata fields.
Yes, that's what I
think. You know, while it's its own thing, I mean, all the tools of the collection could be there without it actually being construed as part of the collection.
Exactly.
So the topic.
That's what I was suggesting, is that we could tag them in the metadata fields such that they were a little bit more searchable. So we could potentially have a list that has this refine the results, but they're just for the talk. It's totally separate from the clean collection itself.
Right.
That could make it a little bit more certain. I mean, now that we certainly have a very broad spectrum of things now.
So, you know, one thing I'm thinking about is the kinds of things we've done in the teleconferences. There's a different things we've done over the years. And one of the ones I'm thinking about is Walt Meyer's September talk.
Yes.
With a science update due to some, you know, physiological event that we wanted to give the community a chance to get a science perspective on. That's one kind of thing. Whereas when we were, you know, just the round robin kind of calls, just for updates and checking in and seeing what's happening, that's a different kind of call. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if there's a quick way of looking at the variety of types of things that we've done over the years on these weekly calls. I mean, this is quite a frequent thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I'm wondering if certain things were more valuable for people than others.
Okay.
Well, I could certainly, I mean, I wouldn't be able to, I probably could come up with a list of the kinds of things we've done that we could potentially identify in a question that sort of says check all that apply, and then have an open one to say other things that mm-hmm. you found valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing that we've talked about, and maybe a question we could add, is the idea of putting up people's presentations, because one of the things we're doing, Tamara, you just talked about this, is we convene sessions at these major conferences. We have
yep.
talked about trying to collect at least the slides or something like that with them.
Yep.
Another piece of, you know, a lot of work, but it's another piece of whether people will be interested in being able to access those presentations.
Right.
Yeah. And for myself, I missed AGU this year, and, you know, there were, 100-plus talks, and I know there's some there that I would love to have seen.
Yeah.
Yeah, The thing is about just posting presentations that
yeah.
are intended as talks is that
yeah.
sometimes they're not really understandable as intended without an audio with it.
That's absolutely
yeah.
true.
Well, I'm wondering if it might be valuable while we're in this space to ask for what kinds of things, if we were going to do new activities.
Yeah.
Now, you know, we don't have resources to do them, but, I mean, if we had the ability to record the audio and the slide sets and post them up, I mean, that's a lot of work. But, you know, sometimes there are talks that are worthy of that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Mark, your sessions at AGU was overflowing, and you had a very high-level group of people doing very timely work. You know, the people in the room found it valuable. The chances are the wider community would find it very valuable.
Mm-hmm.
What is that new function that is needed that we can't do right now? And
there are avenues. I mean, I know through my work in the ESA Federation that there are tools that can allow you to put together, you know, accumulate presentations.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There are probably ways of connecting the audio, but then you have to record it there. And at AGU, they only do that selectively now. I don't know.
Well, what I'm getting at is if we had a team of people, you know, resources are not a problem right now in this conversation. that we're just recording it. They put a microphone on the next to the AGU microphone, recorded it, videotaped it, or whatever. You know, just put the slides right in there, and off we went. You know, that could be done, but we just don't have the resources to do it, and is it a good idea to do it anyway?
Yeah, that's
mm-hmm.
a good idea.
So I guess
I know in the ESA Federation, what we do is we collect all the posters, because those are usually self-contained descriptions, so they're more useful than
mm-hmm.
presentations that are intended to be oral.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you know, just somebody walking down through the poster session and going, I need a digital version of this slide. It's just my job to get them and post them. But, you
mm-hmm.
know, that's nobody's job right now, and
yeah.
nor am I signing up for it.
Another place you can have as a starting point, I mean, and again, we don't even have funds for this either, but again, we're talking like there's no issue about money at the moment,
yep.
is to start with getting the invited speakers talks available.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
At least those have been identified as things that, you know, people more likely will want to see. So that's another idea.
Yeah.
To get to sort of start at a little smaller scale.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're almost to the end of our hour here. What I'm going to suggest, Anna and I will work on a list of questions that we might pose to the Climate Literacy Network. We would like a little bit broader input without like sharing it with the entire Climate Literacy Network, because they're the ones that are supposed to respond to these questions. But if any of you are on the, who are on the phone would be interested in helping provide feedback on these questions, say so, or send me and Anna an email saying so. So we want the group to be relatively small so that the questions are valid for most of the Climate Literacy Network. But I think we would appreciate a little broader input than just the two of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so does anybody want to say that they're interested now?
I'm incredibly interested. It's just a matter of timing.
All right. Well, we won't hold you to absolutely being able to, and we could potentially just put, if we think you're busy, we'll say, well, just look at this section.
Yeah.
Tamara, certainly I'd like to have a look at this stuff.
Okay.
So, you know, just on, I know we're tight on time here, but one other thing that we haven't talked about is the development of the Climate Literacy Guide itself and the Energy Literacy Guide. We did play an instrumental role in the between the 2008 version and the 2009 version. I think that that's an important piece of work that we should think about.
Yeah.
Frank, are you
We actually have, when we describe the efforts over the years, and we describe a little bit of the history of the Climate Literacy Network, we definitely point to this, to our input into those.
Yeah,
and to
that
the
one
input
year,
that we give to the next generation science standards.
Exactly. That's a whole other body of activities that we've done over the years that I think are critical.
Yeah,
so, so one of the things that we probably should do, I'm not saying ask questions about all of these things, but it would be good. We do have a base list. We should make a list that everybody agrees on that, and maybe the question is, are you aware that we gave input to this or this or this? I don't know if that's valuable or not, but I think identifying all these pieces is worthwhile. Mm-hmm.
Mark, did you have something?
I was going to say that I think we can also take some credit for education being one of the four strategic goals of the U.S. Global Change Research Program.
Mm-hmm.
And that may technically predate a lot of what we've done.
It doesn't predate it at all, Mark.
Okay.
You guys absolutely were critical in making that happen.
Yeah.
So say that again, Mark, so I write it down correctly.
Yeah, basically, education and communication are one of the four strategic goals of the U.S. Global Change Research Program, and that came about in large measure because of pressure that we put in and public comments, when they were reviewing the strategic plan that I think made a difference.
Mm-hmm.
There's another – that's absolutely true, but then also the NRC framework – for that sets the foundation for the next generation science standards.
Yeah,
we were instrumental in that.
Mm-hmm.
It says as much in the document. So there's even evidence that happened. But that was how the next generation science standards got such a strong focus on climate.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I was not aware of before, but found out on the NSDL call, this National Science Digital Library call, that the physics community is unhappy about the next generation science standards with respect to climate, with respect to physics. They feel like it's kind of like they feel like earth science has sort of taken over from them. Amazing, huh?
I don't have a lot of sympathy.
Exactly, yeah. They've had their limelight.
Yeah.
Sorry, this is Danelle, actually, and I just want to comment. Sorry, and I was a bit late to the call, but I sat in on the American Association of Physics Teachers review of the Next Generation Science Standards, and I don't think that they're upset about the amount of earth science that's involved. I think they're upset about just the poor quality of NGSS in general and the horrible science that they've, the lack of language, scientific language that's been included in all of that. So, my perspective on that is a bit different.
Mm-hmm. Danelle, when you say that, do you mean with respect to physics or respect to science overall?
Mostly looking at the physics and physical science standards, but overall also just disappointed with NGSS. And I mean, the American Association of Physics Teachers have posted their review of the NGSS, which I was a part of both last year and this year, as was Matthew Inman, a part of it last year. And yeah, they're just not happy with it in general. But it has nothing to do with like earth science. That like that was never mentioned at all in the two reviews that I was in. Was a disappointment about the amount of earth science that was never ever mentioned.
Okay.
That might have been because I heard this secondhand. It might have been in translation from somebody else that I implied that I inferred that.
But how about you?
So that's good to know.
How do you feel about it, Danelle?
The NGSS.
Yeah.
I think that they've given, with the appendices that they've included now, they have really given, and I think Frank pointed this out, schools a way to just avoid altogether having to make too many changes, which is unfortunate, because I think that what you'll see is the schools that have money will make some significant and interesting changes, and the schools who don't, who have historically, you know, not been innovators or been doing well with science education, will just have slight modifications, if any. And that's sad that they've opened up that door for people to do that. And I am disappointed overall in the just avoidance of science language. And the Einstein Fellows review of the NGSS is not great either. So we're concerned about, I mean, we think that it's moving in the right direction, and we think that there's a lot of positive things that can come out of it, but we're still really worried about a lot of the performance expectations, and that a lot of them are just poorly worded, really long, or really hyper-specific, and others are not at all specific. And so it's just, there seems to be like a million different voices who've written that, which is probably accurate, I guess, based on their the way that they put them together. But it's not something that looks polished at all.
Yeah.
Danelle, do they, either of these groups have a perspective on the National Research Council's framework? Because that's actually the standards.
Yeah.
A lot of people have been focusing on the performance expectations as the standards, and they're just the performance expectations, not the actual standards.
Yeah, I would say that the American Association of Physics Teachers probably commented on that the most, and there's some. There are some things that they definitely take issue with the science included in the framework that's wrong, and that, they seem to be set like, we're not going to change any of this, so it's already set, and don't comment on that at all, and that's disappointing.
Yeah.
And that is, again, the physical science physics side, I think overall they're happy with the idea of what's going on, but that there's some blatant scientific errors within the framework, and then that's been carried over to the standards, is disappointing.
Yeah. So, whoever has the best ability to characterize where those errors are, I think that would be a really important thing for us as a community to know, because the transfer to the development community and the professional development community that's coming, you know, as the follow-on waves, I think you can fix some of that there. Kind of like we did in Clean, where we're dealing with some issues a resource has, you're not able to change the resource itself.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to know what those issues are.
Yeah, let me see if I can find the AAPT review, and I think they've pointed out quite a few of them, if not all of them, within the physics side anyway.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I know in the ocean science community, or the educators, there was a lot of concern about some of the factual pieces of that, too. So it's not just in the physics community.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff is just blatantly wrong, just so madly, madly wrong.
Yeah.
It, in the performance expectation and in the framework?
Curiously, I think, Frank, you've talked about this, too. It's actually the translation from the framework into the performance expectations. And there's still a lot of stuff that's just not very solid there, even in this second version.
So I think all the communities, I mean, we may find we're in the same boat out of climate as well. when this is all done. But I think, you know, as we move beyond the development of the frameworks and this performance expectation, and we actually get to work on the real side, I think having a common space where we really understand the issues that were there, then we fix it on the next waves.
The implementation.
Get it there.
What may be useful is, even, you know, as we think about this, is potentially invite some of those people that have a perspective to give it a talk on our teleconference, so that we can get a better idea of those issues.
Absolutely.
Because one of the things we're going to want to do in implementation is, in terms of professional development, is we're going to be wanting to point to the physics standards that climate change can be used to address.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
we need to be able to do that accurately.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. On another note, though, I mean, you know, we were really certain to get the energy literacy framework in the hands of all the writers, and we can see some of the language directly from the concepts from the energy literacy framework in the performance expectations, which is nice.
Yeah, right.
So, Danielle, can you follow up and give us a little bit of an overview of the flaws and how we might best address them?
Yeah, no, definitely. I will follow up on that.
Great, thank you.
Right. Just so we're all clear here, I mean, we're in a bit of a dangerous water, and I'll explain what I mean by that, and I'll be brief. The reason why the framework, they really didn't want to kind of touch the science, was because if you start touching the science, and you open up the door to pseudoscience, if you will, being introduced as well. That was the whole idea between this firewall and the science. But if there is a sound scientific reason for making a change, we need to be able to have a sound basis, whatever that is, for making a modification to the language, and we just have to be very sensitive to the credibility of that argument structure, or else the whole thing could just spin out of control.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks. I gotta go.
Yep.
Okay. Yes. It's 10 minutes past 2 here, so. We will end the call, but I appreciate everybody's input into this, and we'll send out an email to the Climate Literacy Network Clean Community and start that transition.
Excellent.
Okay. Great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks all.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.